Friends, friends, and enemies alike, but more friends this week than normal. It's good to be back here on the Weekly Worldview, and if everything is going according to plan, this is airing on KLTT AM 670, the 50,000-watt blowtorch for the gospel, out there in Denver, Colorado, as we are honored to sit in as Bob Enyart's temporary guest host. As Bob has left the building, he's departed the station, he's gone on to glory. And we are honored and blessed to sit in for him on the terrestrial radio. And I want to welcome all my listeners out there on the World Wide Web, listening to the podcast, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media as we go worldwide to a worldwide audience and local in Denver. Welcome aboard. I guess I'll start with, I've already done my tribute show to Bob when I sat in for Bob last week, so I don't want to go through that again. And then I don't know if I've said this, and I may be repeating myself. As I get older, I find myself repeating myself more and more. And if I make it to the age of 70, I'll just be telling the same stories over and over and over again to a shrinking group of people. But I want to start. Well, you know what I want to start with? I want to start with something from our Below the Fold file. From Below the Fold, 13 people shot at a Kroger grocery store in rural Tennessee. That's Below the Fold. And if you're not in the news media, Below the Fold means it's mentioned in secondary fashion. Below the big headline, where the newspaper used to fold in half, were the secondary headlines that were Below the Fold. And a mass shooting at a grocery store in America now finds itself below the fold. A mass shooting, I said. At least one victim has died of his wounds. 13 people shot. The suspect dead from an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. Another attempted mass murder. I just call it a mass shooting, a mass murder. A murder-suicide. And it's barely mentioned anymore, as if this is to be expected, as if this is the way things are going to be. And we're all just going to agree to tolerate this level of bloodshed. In rural Tennessee, I can't tell you how many people have told me in the past year that they're moving to Tennessee because, you know, things are so bad wherever they are, various places. And they're all going to Tennessee because, well, I'm not going to tolerate this, not without speaking out and, if at all possible, doing something about it. Like, what do you do about a murder-suicide? Well, you continue to stigmatize suicide. That's what we'll do. We'll try to bring back the social taboo against suicide, the cultural taboo against suicide. And that's all we could do. Can it be done? Well, I think it can be done. Because I think an awful lot of people are getting stressed out, and they're realizing that things are coming apart at the seams. And when even the self-absorbed heathens start to realize that things are really coming apart at the seams, that's the time when we as Christians can actually have an effect. We can have a bigger effect than when everybody's fat, dumb, and comfortable. That's right. When things start coming apart at the seams, people tend to look for guidance from traditional sources like the Bible and the living God and Jesus Christ and his body here on earth. So suicide, if you are contemplating suicide, you're one of the worst, most selfish people on the planet, and you need help. You need to reach out for help instead of entertaining the selfish idea of killing yourself so that everybody will finally notice you and care about you. There's other ways. Reach out for help instead of turning inward into what can only be described as a psychotic lucifuge. If you commit suicide in my world, in my life, your name will be blotted out for all history. You will not be remembered in my family, in anything I say or in anything I write, if you commit suicide. It's shameful. All right. And so now, speaking of death, which here at the Weekly Worldview, death is above the fold. It's the big headline, especially when it's a mass shooting. And it highlights the fact that everything is coming apart at the seams. We don't stick it below the fold. And so I don't know if I mentioned that my loss of my best friend, Bob Enyart, who died on September 12th, Sunday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's the first loss I've experienced of someone I spoke with, worked with, ate lunch with on a daily, on a weekly, on a monthly basis. That's the first person in my life like that that I've lost. I've lost some family members, but I wasn't that close to them. And everyone else was 2 or 3 degrees separated that I've known who have died. The closest would probably be Bob's stepdad, Pops. I mean, I talked and worked with him quite a bit when he passed. But this was different because, well, you go listen to the tribute shows over at KGOV.com, and you'll see what I mean why this was different. Although I really love Pops. They're probably having a good time up there discussing Italian food, no doubt. But anyway, Bob's passing makes my mortality and its fragility, and it makes heaven more real to me than it was before. Not that heaven wasn't real to me before, and not that I didn't always know that I'm going to die someday. Those were all established in my mind. But now they've been illuminated, and it's just more real now. It's like good spaghetti versus, wow, that's spaghetti, that type of thing. So Bob and Pops, they know what I'm talking about. If they're listening, and chances are they are not, because they've got a lot of other things to do. But I believe, and I feel already, and I see, and I hear, that the ministry of Bob Enyart will be magnified by his death. It will not decrease, it will actually increase. God does things that way. He always has the last laugh on his enemies. I was talking to a friend who said who did he blame for Bob's death? He blamed Xi Jinping and Donald Trump and Anthony Fauci. Anyway, those are three guys who have spent their lives working against the plan of God to save his people from their sins. I know Donald Trump has seemed to get it squared away. I don't want to insult my Trump fans out there. I know Donald Trump has made an effort. But let's focus on Xi Jinping and his cohort there, Anthony Fauci. They've worked their entire lives against everything good and righteous and noble and just and godly. They've worked against it their whole lives and will continue to do so. But who gets the last laugh on them as they have pursued policies that led to the death of Bob Enyart? Who gets the last laugh? God gets the last laugh. That's who gets the last laugh. It's not going to be Anthony Fauci. Tony don't get the last laugh. No. And it's not going to be Xi Jinping, Panda Bear. No, not Panda Bear. What do they call him? Who's the bear? Pooh Bear. It's not going to be Xi Jinping, Pooh Bear over there in China who gets the last laugh. God's going to get the last laugh. And Bob will get a slap on the back, and the ministry will be magnified. It will increase because many people in Bob's circle, in Bob's orbit, many people who Pastor Bob Enyart influenced over his life, we, these are my friends. You know, I like to greet my friends and my enemies, and I usually greet my enemies first, hoping they're listening because I'd like to get their attention. But I also want to, I'm feeling my friends more this week. So we, in our circle, in our orbit, we all feel an obligation now to step up and do more. And there's way more of us than there was of Bob. Bob did the work of 6 or 9 people, or 12 maybe, depending on what day of the week. But there's more than 6 or 9 or 12 of us. There's hundreds of us. There's maybe thousands of us if you start looking at the kids. I mean, I can't even begin to number the children that were directly influenced by that ministry. kids who were taken out of the government schools, educated and brought up in the fear and admonition of the Lord apart from the world. At least more apart from the world than the world. So how many? Could be 10,000 or more. Could be tens of thousands. Because we just don't know. We know that according to the ratings book back in the 90s when Bob was on TV, it was in the hundreds of thousands. So who knows how many of those families had a kid or two or three or five, kept them out of the government schools, preached the gospel, and now they all feel like they need to do more. And so that there will be an exponential magnification of Bob Enyart Ministries. And as long as Bob Enyart Ministries would condescend to broadcast the Weekly Worldview in the time slots for however long that goes on, if I'm not mistaken, the only decision that's been made by the people who own Bob Enyart Ministries now, I think the only decision they've made is that the ministry will continue. Everything else is to be determined. And so, probably to be determined by you in the audience. So if you want to help, then if you've ever thought about supporting the ministry, go now and support it. All right. Now back to the news, I think, because now I'm not going to do any more tributes and I'm going to go on as if, well, probably not as it was before. No, won't go on as it was before, but we'll go on with the Weekly Worldview and we'll go to Hudson, Ohio with reason number 1209 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Your kid might be expected to read and write about pornography. That's reason number 1,209. That's right. The Hudson, Ohio mayor is asking all five school board members to resign or face possible criminal charges. Criminal charges? Yes, finally. This mayor should be immediately installed as the president by some means. They could face criminal charges over high school course material that a judge has called, quote, child pornography, unquote. A judge said that in court about materials that students at an American government school in Ohio were expected to read and write about and talk about and think about and ponder. I would describe it for you, but I cannot. We're on KLTT in Denver. I don't want to get them fined or shut down for describing what's going on in the government schools. So I won't describe it because it's disgusting. I will. One part of the curriculum prompted students to drink a beer and describe how it tastes. This is for high school kids underage. And that's the least offensive thing in here. The rest of it is shocking, criminal, horrible. And by the way, if you Google this story, Hudson, Ohio, mayor, school board, resign, however you want to Google it, Google lists the number one story as... The number one story that's linked is not the story I downloaded. It's a story headline. Some lawmakers ask for apology of the Hudson mayor for asking the school board to resign. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and it's good to have everybody here on the Weekly Worldview. And why has Google linked to a story about the mayor there in Hudson, Ohio, and that some politicians are asking him for an apology because he asked the school board to resign over criminal a criminal filth that they're making the kids read? It's because Google is evil. How do you know Google is evil? How did I always know Google was evil? It was because in their founding documents, they said, don't be evil. That was a part of their founding policy. They had to write it down and put up a sign to remind them, don't be evil. And that helps them to maybe not be evil some of the time. Because they look up at the sign and they decide to, I don't know, set a bird free or feed a squirrel. And at that moment, when they're feeding the squirrel, they're not evil. The rest of the time, they're evil. All right. Get out of here, Google. And get out of here, school board in Hudson, who allowed... And by the way, folks, get or keep your children out of the government schools. The one thing that separated everything I've done for 25 years, everything Bob Enyart ever did, was that we had the courage to stand up and tell people, get your kids out of the government schools, even though we knew that that would offend them and it would make them feel bad and they wouldn't like us most of the time. But even they are starting to, well, now their kids, I think, are starting to wake up and realize what's going on. All right, now we go to the real economics news where Chinese authorities, this is from Fox Business, Chinese authorities are getting ready for Evergrande to collapse. What's Evergrande? Evergrande is a giant real estate development company in China. And it's, think of Lehman Brothers circa 2008. Or was that 2007 when Lehman collapsed? And then, anyway, think Lehman Brothers. Not quite as big, but pretty big, because China's economy is not quite as sophisticated as America's. And they are about to miss, well, they've already missed bond payments, big ones. A Morgan Stanley analyst said Beijing's going to have to prevent a fast and sharp housing deterioration. Does that sound familiar? For anyone who was sentient in 2007, 8, 9, remember all that? The Chinese, do you think they have the tools at their disposal to prevent the shockwaves to go through the world economy when Evergrande goes belly up? They do not. They can't fake it like we did. And so, anyway, we'll see what happens. By the way, I did not know this. In China, real estate and real estate-linked industries collectively drive about a third of all economic output. So about a third of China's economy is being threatened with some significant shockwaves, and the rest of the world is invested to some degree as well. So keep your powder dry, and if you have money in the United States, your best bet is to put it in the dirt. And I don't mean bury it in the background and in the backyard. I mean buy real estate is what I mean. If you're going to invest your money in something, put it in dirt. They're not making any more of it. Okay, let's see here. I had something else. Oh, Xi Jinping. Xi over there in China, he has a new mantra. His new mantra is homes are for living in, not for speculation. That wasn't very good Chinese. All right. Home are for living in, not a speculation. So it's, why does he say that? Because he is a stupid communist. He's a stupid communist, because anyone who doesn't want their home to appreciate while they live in it, well, they're not being honest if that's what they say. We all want our homes to at least maintain their value, hopefully even increase in value. So the very act of buying a home is speculative. And yes, the great thing about real estate is you get to enjoy it and live there while it appreciates in a healthy economy. But Xi wants everyone to believe that homes are for living in and not in speculation because, well, that must be from our stupid communist file. Change our filing system there. Okay, now, from the Dim New World file, this is really creepy. I guess back in 1993, Ruth Bader Ginsburg addressed a woman's right to choose. I think is how she put it. As she was wont to do quite often through her life. And anyway, here's the quote that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, what was this, before the Senate Judiciary Committee back in 1993, back when I believe Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton was president. Yeah, I believe he appointed her to the Supreme Court, if I'm not mistaken. And I could be mistaken. No, I'm not. So when Bill Clinton got elected, I thought there is no way America is going to survive this. And I may turn out to be correct. It hung on a little longer than I thought. Anyway, here's what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said in 1993, addressing a woman's right to choose. Quote, "The decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a woman's life, to her well-being and dignity. It's a decision she must make for herself. When government controls that decision for her, she's being treated as less than a fully adult human, responsible for her own choices." Yeah. Unquote. Well, apparently the ACLU had that quote, I guess on their website. It must be on their website because you can't do this to books. But here's what they did. They changed the quote. The ACLU edited, they sent her quote up to the Ministry of Truth and had it edited to take out, well, here it is now. Here's what her quote says now on the ACLU website.
"The decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a person's life and their well-being and dignity. And when the government controls that decision for people, they're being treated less than fully not responsible for their own choices."
So,
unquote. Sorry about that.
So the ACLU removed all the feminine pronouns and assigned gender-neutral fluidity to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's. And if we could reach across the gulf that's fixed between heaven and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and we ask her how she feels about it, I'm fine with it. I'm fine.
That's great. I love it. Anybody got a cigarette? A Virginia Slim? No, I don't need a light.
So, unquote, if that was... Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she'd be fine with this descent into Orwellian, dystopian, bizarro world. It's what she dreamed of her whole life. ACLU then tweeted... they tweeted the new quote that's been polished and revamped and churned through the Ministry of Truth to remove all those offensive feminine pronouns. And then they tweeted later in the day about a patient getting an abortion. A patient, not a woman. A patient. Well, guess what, Ruth? You don't get the last laugh. Huh? Enjoy that Virginia Slims while you can, sweetheart. Because God's going to get the last laugh on you. Well, he's already having it, as a matter of fact. Okay. Now, back to serious news. The age of Democratic elections ended in November of 2020, in case you didn't notice. If you had any doubt about the age of real Democratic elections in America, and I believe anywhere on earth, if you thought maybe there was going to ever be another Democratic election that was actually real and fair, well, here's some proof that it's never going to happen again. Out in California, Gavin Newsom ran against, I think, like 35 people that nobody ever heard of, except a handful of people in L.A. had heard of one radio guy. And he beat them 70-30. He got more votes in the recall election on September 14th than he got 3 years ago when he actually ran for governor. And the polls closed at 8 p.m. in California. The election was called for Newsom, 70-30 at 8:02. Not that there was anything fixed about that. It's just that they really count fast in Sacramento. So the final tally, by the way, on the actual votes, that's going to take weeks for the Secretary of State and all the people who pretend like they're counting votes to... Anyway, it usually takes several weeks for the final, but it doesn't matter because everyone just nods and winks and says, look, we know the fix is in. Come on. Uh-huh. Anyway, I got this article from Front Page Magazine. I'll link to this because it's got a lot of interesting history about the prior recall back in the 90s. Was it? No, 2004, was it? Anyway, I can't remember exactly when California recalled Gray Davis. But a lot of interesting history. about how Christopher Reeves and Michael J. Fox, they were going to all cure Parkinson's disease, and the blind were going to see and the lame were going to walk, and all we had to do was butcher these children and harvest their bodies and take their stem cells. And that all turned out to be a lie. And back then, we could do something about it in an earthly sense. Now, forget about it. There will never be another real election. And how do I say that confidently, that there will never be another fair election? Well, it's this whole mail-in ballot thing. And, you know, I've never been a fan of democracy anyways. But what concerns me is that all the people who've been raised their whole life to worship democracy, when they realize that democracy has now been taken from them and their position as one of the little tyrants has been diminished, in fact, has been eliminated. You remember it was one of the founding fathers who said, I'd rather be ruled by one tyrant 3,000 miles away than 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away. He was talking about democracy. Well, now all the little tyrants, all their power is going to be taken from them. They're going to realize they have no vote, and they're going to get very angry about that. And when people get very angry and think that they have no political voice, well, that ends badly. That ends very badly. And by the way, I'm talking about more than half the people in the country are going to be extremely upset and frustrated that they can no longer lord their vote over anyone. That the fix is in. And I don't want it to end badly. I'd rather not. I'd rather be fat, dumb, and comfortable. That's what I'd rather be. But with what's happening, with what's happening on both a moral scale, a cultural and civilizational scale, and even on an electoral scale, my concern is that it won't end well. View. I am your host, Doug McBurney, here in the Worldview Studios. It's good to be back. It's good to have you back. Thanks for sticking with us as we roll into another half hour of, well, hopefully thought-provoking, edifying, and sometimes entertaining, maybe even funny, broadcasting here as we continue. As the week continues, we must continue into the personhood file here at the Weekly Worldview. A young woman in Britain, a 26-year-old woman, she was born with Down syndrome. And in England, the formerly Great Britain, sometime referred to as British, they have abortion regulations that, they claim that abortions are forbidden, absolutely forbidden, forbidden, we said. I believe they're forbidden after 24 weeks. We'll have none of that. We will simply not tolerate any abortion after 24 weeks, except for this list of exceptions that include, amongst a number of others, Down syndrome. Well, actually more than just Down syndrome. Actually, any serious handicap or mental abnormality, deformity, any substantial risk that the child would suffer. You can pretty much just put it that way. If there's any chance the child could suffer, even if it's after 24 weeks, well, we can certainly consider killing the child. Legally, of course. All right. We slipped into channeling someone from the Minister of Parliament or something like that. So technically, abortion is forbidden in England after 24 weeks. Yeah, but not really. So this young woman in England, Heidi Crowder, she wanted to, well, she filed a lawsuit against the British government asking them to strike down the exception that they made for her. Why did she have standing to do that? Because it was legal to kill her after 24 weeks. And by the way, there's nothing that says after 26 years in the law. It says that you can kill a person for having Down syndrome even if they're older than 24 weeks and even if they're younger than 24 weeks. And then who knows where this goes? Where does it go? It goes to 26 years is where it'll go eventually. And so she filed a lawsuit and she was defeated. As you can well imagine, this is England after all. Two senior judges ruled against her. No, they didn't rule against her. They just dismissed her case. What was their argument? But they just dismissed her, is what they did. They just dismissed her. Just like the law in England dismisses the lives of every child in the womb. I know they have it dressed up with some regulations that make them all drink their tea and feel just fine about it. It's all not neat and clean, you know. But in fact, they not only dismissed Heidi Crowder, they dismissed every child in England and every disabled person in England. These two judges. Anyway, in this particular case of people that they like to kill, which one of them is Heidi Crowder, they don't just want to dismiss her, they want to kill her. She knows that intuitively. If not her, then her children, her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren. Heidi's not a dummy. Heidi might have Down syndrome, but she's not deluded enough to believe that you can dress up murdering children as anything but murdering children and that that threatens everyone. And so Heidi had the good sense that these two judges don't have. Their argument was, not all mothers want to blah, 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 blah. It just really doesn't matter what they said. Not all mothers want to do a lot of things. How that has any impact on you legalizing the murder of innocent people, that I don't understand. These two judges should both be arrested and locked in a cage on an island somewhere, and Heidi Crowder should be installed in their circuit and take over the entire circuit. She should rule on every case going forward. And if you think I'm joking about that, that's not even close to a joke. Deadly serious. If I was king of the world, those two guys would be in a cage on a rock somewhere with nothing except buzzards on the outside. And Heidi would rule from the bench. And I would let her design her own robe. Now, I want to get into a very disturbing report from the media. I consume some media, not a lot, because I can't take it. As a matter of fact, since Bob Enyart departed from here to go there, to go to heaven, and to be with all the people that he led to the Lord, and to just revel in the victory that he had over all of his enemies who hated him all those years. He just reveled in the joy of all the friends he made. Before all that happened, I listened to the radio all the time while I was driving. And since Bob died, I have not listened to the radio in the car. And I'm kind of bummed because I just invested a lot of money into a very expensive aftermarket radio, and I'm not listening to it. But that's okay because I'm driving around and I'm actually allowing my own thoughts to percolate up in my head, and then I'm pondering them and I'm trying to think them through. And this is on the advice of a young man. I'm not going to give his name, but a young man who was influenced by Bob Enyart's ministry. He told me that he had read somewhere in a book that, you know, one of the problems with modern life is that we never have quiet time. If we're driving, we're listening to the radio. If we're not driving, we're on our phone and we're seeing something, consuming some media, listening, right? We just never have time when we just can think in silence. And when he said that, I kind of was like, yeah, it's probably true. You know, I have too many media streams in my life. There's no doubt about that. And sometimes it drives me crazy. Sometimes I throw my phone onto my desk because I'm like, leave me alone. Just leave me alone sometimes. Anyway, so I didn't decide. This just kind of organically occurred. I just began not listening to the radio in the car. By the way, if you're in your car listening to me on the radio, thank you very much. Don't stop listening on my account. But I haven't been able to. I've had no desire to. The KLT's probably thrilled to hear this. That's it, Doug. Tell people that. Thanks a lot. This is why you never had a radio career. Thank you very much. No, you know why I never had a radio career? I never had a radio career because when I first started and tried to be on the radio, I thought that I could kind of be like the other conservatives I was listening to at the time. This would have been in the mid to late 1990s. I thought that I could walk a fine line between doing right by God, but not offending a lot of people by mentioning Jesus too much, or maybe even at all. And I had seen and heard an awful lot of radio hosts who called themselves Christians upon occasion, or at least they alluded to God upon occasion. But they assiduously avoided topics like the murder of innocent children, homosexual perversion, other sexual immorality, the government schools. And they pretty much stuck to politics and elections and I think guns. They would be willing to talk about guns and money. Yeah, money and guns and votes. And as long as they stuck with that, they could stick God in there every once in a while and make like $20 million a year. So at one time, I thought that might be possible in my life. But I realized that once I actually got on the air and started talking, that I couldn't help but talk about what I knew God would want me to talk about. And that's because Bob Inyart had an influence on me. He did the same thing. When I first met him, he was on his way to being big like, maybe not like Rush, because nobody would ever be big like Rush, but he was going to be big like, bigger than... this is embarrassing that I can't think of their names, but it actually says something about them. I can't think of their names. And, you know, the second stringers, the guys who regurgitated whatever Rush said during the day. Not Sean Hannity. He was the main regurgitator. That was his job, was to simply carry Rush's audience for his advertisers for another 3 hours. There it is. Bob was on his way to being bigger than Dennis Prager, one of the guys I couldn't think of his name. Although I like a lot of stuff Dennis Prager has done, don't get me wrong, just listening to him on the radio, it's like taking a sleeping pill. I just can't take it. But I like a lot of the things he's written, a lot of things he's done. In fact, we should pick someone less than Dennis Prager. Not Michael Medved, although he's pretty low down the food chain. There's an even worse one that's just intolerable, sufferable, horrible to listen to. He's a hack Republican. He wears thick glasses. He's got a square head and kind of shock whitish gray hair. And I can't think of his name, but I detest everything about his show. Almost everything he's ever said or represented in his life makes me want to hurl. And I can't think of his name, but you know who I'm talking about, right? Well, Bob was on his way to being bigger than those guys. But he could not help himself. He could not help himself but to say the things he knew God wanted him to say, even though, I don't even know if he knew this at the time, because talk radio was all relatively new. Nobody knew how many tens of millions and billions of dollars was going to be involved. But I wonder if he knew that truncated his potential for popularity. Especially talking about sexual immorality as it related to homosexuality back then and the public schools. The public schools was the big third rail that nobody else was ever willing to address.
Hugh Hewitt.
That's it, Hugh Hewitt. So Bob had more talent. Bob had more talent in his nose hair than Hugh Hewitt has in his entire body, career, his entire lineage going back six generations. And Bob would have been bigger than him in a secular sense. But instead, Bob chose to be bigger than him in a much more important sense. How he would impact the trajectory of the lives of the people who were listening. Rather than focusing on ratings and trying to be popular with this political party or that political party or to go along with precedent and be look like a smart guy when it came to the Constitution and the law and all of that. I don't even know if I can do a Hugh Hewitt imitation. I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible to do an imitation of such a vacuous, empty suit. I would just have to have like 30 seconds of silence. Anyway, so Hugh Hewitt will be remembered in whatever small way he's remembered when this all shakes out. And we all go on from this relatively brief sojourn here on this planet. And we go on to a much, much longer sojourn. Not even a sojourn, our final destination. Once we get to what we were actually intended for, which was eternal life in heaven. How do I know that? Well, because the earth was originally part of heaven. It says that in the Bible. We were meant to live in heaven forever. And so Hugh Hewitt and all the guys who made the tens of millions and the, Hugh Hewitt probably makes not as much as anyway. But all the guys who made all the money and got popular and got syndicated on 300 stations, 400 stations, because they assiduously avoided the topics that God cared the most about, they will have their reward. They're having it now. Hugh Hewitt gets to go on CNN and Fox News because he's so broad-minded. So he goes on network TV and he shills for a little bit, gets scale. He goes on Fox News, shills a bit, gets scale. But it's before, by the end of the day, you're talking some real money. So anyway, they'll have their reward for whatever that's worth. And then Bob Enyart, who decided to talk about the things that really needed to be talked about and cared more about having an impact on the trajectory of his audience's life and their children's, well, he gets his reward. You know, a colleague of mine long ago, whenever he was confronted by an atheist or an unbeliever, or he was called a right-wing religious fanatic or a Bible thumper or a fundamentalist, he used to just look at the person over his glasses, and then he would calmly say, "May God reward you according to your works." Mm-hmm. That's what he would say, kind of a passive-aggressive, back-of-the-hand type of thing. And I always thought that was pretty effective. Anyway, that gets me. I was talking about the media. I'm sorry. I got to go. Hey, this from the End of Civilization file. I was consuming a little bit of media the other day in the form of Tucker Carlson. Who I watch upon occasion, and Tucker Carlson had Andy Ngo on. Andy Ngo is an investigative journalist, and he's a homo. That's right, he's a homo. And it was the second homo that Tucker Carlson had on the air the other day. Two of them. Tucker almost always has at least one homo on. Sometimes he doubles down. Tucker was reporting on the pervert who flashed the people in the spa out in L.A., this guy named Merriger. And who, by the way, the flasher declared himself a transgender, a woman. And so Andy Ngo is on Tucker Carlson talking about the pervert who declared himself a woman. And Andy Ngo refers to the pervert flasher as she. Yeah, he refers to the pervert flasher as she. Yeah, he says, quote, "The details is that she was convicted of," and then I don't want to say what this pervert did. But anyway, Tucker just sat there and went along with it. Tucker sat there and went along with Andy Ngo, a homo, referring to a tranny as she. Tell me this isn't the end of civilization. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Yes, it's always good to have you back here on the Weekly Worldview. As I said, I'm Doug McBurney, your host. Joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Thank you very much. She helps make me sound good. Is that bad grammar? Yeah. She helps make me sound well? How could I say it? She helps make me sound, period. That's all. Gooder. That's it. Gooder, getter, better. All right. From the Desperately Seeking file. And so this is a story from the Atlantic. I read a story from the, it's the Atlantic Monthly. It's an old magazine that's skewed to the left more and more over the years to where now they're just on a grease pole. Just every issue is just slid to hell on a grease pole, jet rockets and all. And this week they make the Desperately Seeking file. Couldn't think of what they were desperately seeking because I can't relate. But the authors at the Atlantic Monthly are desperately seeking something. And they report on the Roe baby is what they call her. And this is the baby that was at the heart of the Roe versus Wade decision back in January 1973. They talk about Norma McCorvey, who was Jane Roe, who was a waitress in Dallas, a bit of a slut, got herself pregnant on a number of occasions, never really got married, and how she challenged the law there in Texas. By the way, there was a law back then that prohibited abortion, except a number of, there were a number of exceptions, but the liberals, they didn't just want that. They didn't just want to regulate the killing of children, and this is something that gets to the heart of people. The frothing at the mouth leftists, they want to kill every baby. That's all I can, I can't imagine why else, when they have a law that says you can kill almost every baby, and the left has to fight for more. It's just an insight into how evil these people are. You know, the Republicans, they just want to have a law against abortion so that they can get your vote. But then if they actually need to have an abortion for one of the women that they cheat on their wife with, well, the Republicans would like to have the law written so that, you know, at least the option's available. And that's pretty wicked. That's pretty corrupt. But the Republican, he's just obsessed with cheating on his wife. He's not obsessed with destroying mankind. Although you could make a case that that he's just as guilty as they are in the end. He's just not in as much of a hurry, maybe. So anyway, I'll link to this article at the Atlantic because it's very interesting to read about the child who was actually at the crux of the case back in 1973 from a Christian perspective, because it's written from a very secular, wicked, evil, corrupt, destructive perspective. But if members of this audience read it, they're going to read it from a perspective that will shine an awful lot of light on the hearts of the people, not only involved in Jane Roe, Norman McCorvey's story, but in the writing of this story in the Atlantic now, circa 2021. The story is all about how Norma McCorvey went to find her third child, which was the baby at the center of Roe. And it's interesting in the story that Norma McCorvey did not seek to find her other two children that she had given up for adoption because she was a bit of a slut and got herself pregnant upon occasion, never really got married. She never sought to find those two because what she was really looking for was some publicity and some money. And so she thought that if she could find the baby that the pro-life movement had kind of christened this child the Roe baby, because the Roe baby was never aborted. By the way, just so you know, the Supreme Court, because it takes so long to do anything, can't make up its mind, doesn't know what to do. So the baby was born and lived a life. Her name was Shelley. And Shelley thought her mom was just looking for publicity, and Shelley didn't want to meet her mom. Shelley was angry at her mom. Norma McCorvey wanted Shelley to be thankful that Norma McCorvey was her mom, and Shelley wasn't. In fact, in the article, she kind of, pretty much comes right out and say, what am I supposed to thank you for getting knocked up and then wanting to abort me? And that you happened to run out of time and you couldn't do it? I'm supposed to be thankful for you? I'm supposed to want to hang out with you? Oh, and by the way, then you just gave me away because, you know, my mom just abandoned me, wanted to kill me, couldn't pull that off. She wants to abandon me. So anyway, the whole story is how Shelley has been damaged. Antidepressants, depression, all of that. Even after she had a She had at least one child and then decided she didn't want to have any more children because she was depressed. She didn't like her life. And that she never felt comfortable around anybody. She never felt like she could be anybody's friend 100%. It's just really a sad story about... And, of course, the Atlantic Monthly, they say that Shelley... The Roe baby, that Shelley represents not the sanctity of life, no, because the Atlantic would never acknowledge the sanctity of life. They say Shelley is really all about how difficult it is to be born unwanted. That's, what? Really? Is that, yeah, being born unwanted is, it leads to a tough row to hoe. But if you ask Shelley, do you think she would rather have been butchered? I don't think so. But the article never gets into that. And it also barely mentions Norma McCorvey's Christian conversion for whatever that Christian conversion was worth. That, now having read more about Norma McCorvey, and not just this article, but I've read a number of pieces on her since she died. She died in 2017, by the way. Anyway, her Christian conversion appears to have been something of a publicity stunt as well. I mean, I hope it was sincere. I hope so. But, anyway, she's not exactly a paragon of virtue was Norma McCorvey. But anyway, the Atlantic barely mentions her Christian conversion and only in association with her being, quote, fundamentally unhappy. There's one paragraph in the article about Norma McCorvey's Christian conversion and her switching of sides from pro-abortion to anti-abortion. There's only one paragraph, and it ends with she was fundamentally unhappy. See how they stick that word fundamental in there, huh? Hey, I'm not going to say that the people at The Atlantic are not good writers. They're good writers. But just so they know, I'm a good reader, and I notice stuff like that. You stuck the word fundamental right in the middle of fundamentally unhappy as you talked about Norma's conversion and the people she hung out with after she became a Christian. Anyway, we'll all find out if Norma McCorvey's conversion was sincere. We'll find that out one day all together. If we care to even be, we probably won't care about things like that when we get there. It'll just be like, oh, you're here. Wow. And then we'll see each other clearly for the first time. It'll be great. All right. So now let's come back to Earth after... After all that, we go to the widespread cowardice file, where people in England, according to Breitbart, this is from, I guess they got a story off from the Telegraph over there in London. There's been a significant increase in people falling down the stairs going into the London Underground because people are afraid of catching coronavirus from the handrails. Yeah. So they won't hold on to the handrails, and so they fall down the stairs into the underground, which is like concrete steps. Another significant factor to blame for the injuries is drunkenness. So if you're in England, even when they're drunk, they're scared of catching the coronavirus, and they won't hold on to the handrails. I don't even have to be drunk. I hold on to the handrails. I remember when I was young, I remember wondering, what are these handrails for? And just running up and down, and I could have cared less, had no fear. Now I hold the handrails, and I walk. Sometimes I put both feet on each step. But anyway, in England, the mental damage, the psychological damage is so severe, because England is so far post-Christian, these people are so terrified of dying, because they know they're going straight to hell, or at least they don't know where they're going, and they're terrified. So they're so scared they won't grab the handrails when, you know, all good sense would say, look, you're over 50. You know, you're not only are your legs not what they used to be, your hand-eye coordination ain't what it used to be, buddy. And now you've had a couple of pints. You might want to grab the handrail. Oh, no, Corona. Okay. Let's see here. Yeah, they quote a study. This is unbelievable. So there was a study back in February the government released there in England, and they said that this study proves that there are no traces of the Chinese virus on any shared surfaces. They don't stick to the handrails, people. Here's a study. But by then, nobody believed them anymore. Nobody believes the government anymore. Pretty much anywhere in the world, everyone's like, well, I don't know what to believe. I mean, we could fall back on the 150 years of, you know, science on infectious disease that we all pretty much had agreed on before all this, but we're not going to do that. We're going to freak out and assume that if we touch something, we're going to die. Well, guess what? If you fall down the stairs at the underground, you might die. Row right under the tube there, mate. Something like that. It's like, wow, it's scary. Anyway, listen to this. Some of the polls they cite in this article are shocking. 80% of people in Britain felt some level of nervousness at the end of the lockdown. 80% of the people were scared that they were going to not lock down anymore.
What?
I know. It's shocking. 70% of people in England today, 70% say they would feel unsafe in a crowd without a mask. Wow. 70%. Talk about the psychological trauma that these ignorant heathens have suffered. If they weren't my enemies, it would be laughable. And you know what? I do have some measure of pity for them. Just enough to tell them that God is real. Jesus Christ came to earth and he said he could save the world. And then he proved that he had power over death. And I believe it. That's the extent of the grace that I'm willing to extend to these horrifically cowardice people. That's it. That's all I can do. And that's the Weekly Worldview, folks. I want to thank everyone for being with me, especially, who do I usually thank? Oh, American Right to Life, of course. And the Personhood Alliance, I thank them. Real Science Radio, of course. Another thing that's been decided is that Real Science Radio is going to attempt to continue somehow without Bob. I'm not sure how that happens, but hey, with God, there's hope in anything. So, and I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, for making it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And now I've got some extra time here, right? So I tried to hit my time marks for the terrestrial radio folks. But you folks who are listening on the podcast, you get an extra 30 seconds or so, I think. And so what can we talk about? Well, we've talked about the terrified people. From the confirmation of everything I said file, a former FDA commissioner. That's right. What's this? He was on Face the Nation, right? This is big news. What's this fella's name? Maybe he doesn't want to give his name because he's so ashamed of what he's about to say. He basically admitted that the 6-foot rule that they recommended that they still recommend and the stickers are still on the floor. He said nobody knows where that came from. That's right. He said the CDC, if they'd have said you only had to keep kids 3 feet apart, a lot of schools would have stayed open, but we decided on 6 feet. Why? Well, nobody really knows. That's right. Doesn't know where it came from. He says ultimately it was completely arbitrary, and that's why we were able to change it to 3 feet later, is because the 6 feet was a scam. The CDC had said, let's try 10 feet, and people thought, well, 10 feet, that's kind of hard to measure. Because I don't know why. How is it any harder to measure 10 feet than 6 feet? Oh, no, they knew that that would have too deleterious an effect on the economy too quickly, and people would probably rebel more quickly. So they set it at 6 feet to try to thread the needle, so to speak. And there you have it. Anyway, this article that I pulled down from where did I get this? Oh, from Breitbart. They wonder in the article if this undermines Americans' confidence in advice from public health officials. Gee, do you think? Maybe? I mean, I never even went to college. I don't have a degree. I don't work in the government. I'm not a public health official. I'm not a doctor. Don't know much about public health at all. But the minute I heard 6 feet, the first thing I said was, where did that come from? And then I looked for days, because what else did I have to do? And my phone wasn't ringing. My business was closed. I mean, not on my account. I didn't close it. My customers closed it as they all hid under their beds. Anyway, I said, where did it come from? And I said, nowhere. It came from nothing. Nothing, nowhere. And now this official, his name is Gottlieb. I don't have his first name. He was on Face the Nation, and he said it. We don't know where it came from. You know, could have been 3, could have been 6. Yeah, you got 6. There you go. All right, that's it, folks. It's the Weekly Worldview. I already said my goodbyes, but I'll say them again. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and American Right to Life for all the good work they do. And should the Lord tarry, We shall return next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.